And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'll be your host today. My name is Jamie Waste. We're going to be speaking with folks from the Juno Symphony, their upcoming performance. Lisa Abias and Dwayne Corbin will be in the studio in just a matter of minutes. We'll also be finding out what a statewide group of middle schoolers are learning about drones. We're going to learn about Stick Figures, an art project for the Ark of Anchorage. And Amy Cattinger will be here with a preview of her presentation about eating for energy. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more today on KTOO News in Juneau.
This is National Native News. I'm Stephen Emmons, in for Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska law enforcement officials say heroin gets into the southwest town of Bethel, mainly on low-security small airline passenger flights. This is our third and final story in a series about heroin in the town. KYUK's Daisha Eaton reports.
City Manager Ann Capella says the trouble heroin is causing in Bethel requires a coordinated campaign not unlike the one that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security developed with the goal of rooting out terrorists. Although Bethel's heroin campaign is on a smaller scale, it uses the same slogan.
If you see something, say something.
Capella, who was hired about 6 months ago, says the city doesn't have the capacity to take on multinational drug rings, so the community must work together to root out dealers and traffickers who have set in motion a slew of problems impacting everything from OCS cases to fire and police calls.
We need the information from the community. We don't have the manpower to be, but we need the community to be our eyes and ears. They need to let us know.
Capella says the idea is to support a grassroots effort already brewing in the community. One aspect of the campaign promotes a tip line that goes straight to the Alaska State Troopers Western Alaska Alcohol and Narcotics Team, or WANT. Capella says the city also hopes to work with social services and healthcare providers, tribes, and others to get addicts the help they need to quit. At a meeting in which the Bethel City Council tasked city administration with making a heroin action plan, council member Mark Springer said the heroin problems have gotten so bad that they need to call in reinforcements.
We would be happy to see as much law enforcement pressure as possible brought to bear against people who are importing narcotics into Bethel and selling them here.
Todd Mooring is an investigator with WANT. He says heroin makes its way to Bethel and other bush communities in smaller quantities.
We're not receiving pounds directly from Mexico on a freight aircraft or something like that, but we're receiving user amounts.
He says it's coming through mail, freight services, and the port. But he says a lot comes in simply on passengers on smaller airlines serving Bethel.
Security screening is not the same as you would get for your larger commercial jets. So folks are carrying drugs in their baggage, they're carrying it on their person.
Troopers with the WANT team say they've requested a drug dog for their Bethel office, but State of Alaska officials say they don't have the resources to provide one. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Representatives from Wisconsin's 11 tribes are wrapping up a conference on Native American tourism. As WXPR's Natalie Jablonski reports, many are looking to tourism to provide an economic boost.
The Sakagan Chippewa community hosted the annual Native American Tourism of Wisconsin, or NADAL, conference this week. Tribes from around the state gathered in Mole Lake to talk about fresh ways to market themselves and draw visitors. NADAL's executive director, Ernie Stevens III, says tourism can go beyond gaming to create economic value for the tribes.
We focus on the cultural side, you know, the historical side, the elements that I think people don't get enough of and don't see enough of, hear enough of, even taste enough of, because there's also Native cuisine that you want to promote and get out there into the world. So all these things, these hidden gems and these things that people have yet to experience.
Stevens says NADAO is looking at new ways of raising awareness and sharing cultural stories, including plans for an online TV program. He also says each tribe will be unique in determining if and how they want to draw more tourists. For National Native News, I'm Natalie Jablonski.
And I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio, Dwayne Corbin, who is the guest conductor with the Juneau Symphony, and Lisa Abias, who is the concertmaster and soloist in the upcoming performance of the, I guess it's called the Summer Pops Concert, mm-hmm. and that's the main thing that you folks are in here today to talk about. So,
yes.
Give us some dates and tell us about the Pops Concert.
Sure, I'd love to. This weekend, Saturday, 8 o'clock, and Sunday at 3 o'clock at Junior Douglas High School, we'll be doing our annual Pops Concert. And it's always a treat to do a Pops show, and sometimes people don't know what a Pops Concert means, so there's a lot of different ways that can work. Sometimes we bring in big guest shows or guest artists. This time what we decided to do was to do kind of a variety show, if you will, for the concert. We have four pieces that feature some local talent on there. So we have our two soloists from the Young Artist Competition who will be playing their pieces. And then Lisa, along with harpist Candace and another violinist Franz, are going to be playing some music from Schindler's List. And then we'll have film music from Lord of the Rings. We have The Sorcerer's Apprentice. We have a really great symphony by a composer named William Grant Still, which has real strong jazz and blues influences into the music. And so everything has these interesting, fun connections to either film or to jazz. And then, of course, the feature being these young artists as kind of the culmination of their work and coming out of the competition that they had a year ago to win the honor of playing with the symphony.
So, and Pops, you've just tied mm-hmm. it to kind of some popular cultural
sure.
kind of motifs.
Yep.
Is that
yep.
typically what a Pops concert would kind of conjure up in people's minds?
Sure,
or
yeah. It could be something more like that, which may even have rock or jazz influence. But sometimes, I mean, the oldest kind of Pops concerts, thinking back almost 100 years ago to the Boston Pops, would be just a classical concert that has lots of short pieces. And so here we actually have seven pieces, and the symphony has four sub-movements there. So it's just kind of short piece after short piece, a lot of variety. There's something there for everyone. And so that's one of the things that might define that as a Pops concert.
And every year, does the Juneau Symphony do all symphonies do a Pops concert or two in a course of a season or more? Or
you could speak to that, Lisa, since you've been here for a while.
Yeah, we've been doing a Pops concert, I think – since Kyle Wiley Pickett's second year, I believe, we added that onto our season. Many symphonies do way more than one Pops concert in their mm-hmm. season. I mean, we see the Anchorage Symphony having, three or four a year. So,
right.
Yeah, it's done a lot.
Yeah, we're moving to, a realization in orchestral worlds where, film scores are beautiful music. And actually now video game music is really kind of entering the same realm. Video game music and film scores, the audience wants to hear that. And so, and that's really kind of the new, where a lot of the new music is being written. So 100 years ago, where the Pops concerts started to become more popular, it's going to be a lot of outdoor, like, marches, and it's going to be light classical or operetta music. Those were the main influences, maybe some music theater. Now the influence tends to be more from the film scores, and so that's why we put a couple of those film pieces there on the concert. And so, yeah, I think a lot of orchestras do at least one a year. Sometimes mm-hmm. they might have the same. I was talking to a conductor last week who does four classical concerts and four Pops concerts in his orchestra every year. So it really depends on the audience and the orchestra.
Lisa, as concert master, what does concert master mean here in Juneau, and is it the same everywhere? I mean, give people a sense of what that means.
Well, generally, concert master is the leader of the string section. in some places it's different. In Juneau, I bow all the parts, which means I tell everybody when they go up and when they go down with their bow. I help wrangle the players and, you know, get them all ready to play. I help them learn their music. And then, you know, I lead them in when we're rehearsing and when we're performing. Sometimes it's not as easy to see the conductor. Everybody can't see that. And it's easier for them sometimes to follow my bow or follow my instrument.
And how long have you been the concertmaster, or is this just for a particular concert that you're designated that, or has you been doing it for years? Or
I've been concertmaster for, I think, 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the concertmaster role, I mean, the conductor and the concertmaster have to work well together, and it's really a team sport, so to speak. There's so many specific intricacies of how the string instruments work, not just the bow, but also which of the four strings you're going to play that one note on, because you know they're found on different parts of each string. And so there's lots of really specific techniques that the concertmaster helps. So sometimes the conductor might say, we want it to sound like this, and then the concertmaster turns the word this into specific technique. And she'll say, all right, put your left hand here, right hand, we're going to do this. Oh, okay, great. So it's this kind of translation, as well as the fact that the concertmaster really is going to help establish what the sound of the orchestra is, because they're going to lead the string section, which is, of course, the majority of the instruments on the stage. So really, really important role.
You have two young performers. Why don't you talk about that special feature of the show this weekend?
Sure. So Tessa Haddock won the Juno Symphony Concerto competition last year in the junior division. And normally that person would play with the student symphony. But Lisa, why don't you tell what happened there in terms of what the judge's reaction to his playing was?
Well, Tessa got on stage and started playing, and we were all just floored. He was, I mean, amazing. The sound that came out of his little tiny violin, because he was 12 at the time, I believe. he just blew us away. It was great. He was awesome. And so we did ask him to play with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually the junior high age students, their sound isn't big enough to fill the room. And he actually was able to do it. We also have James Cheng, who will be playing the Haydn Cello Concerto, and he won the high school division. And so he is just doing an amazing job, and so we're really proud of what he's doing and looking forward to that. And there's actually one other high school student, or soon-to-be high school student, that we snuck in on this concert, Lily Otsea, a fabulous singer. At the very end of The Lord of the Rings, there's a song that is sung, and so it's supposed to be a child soprano, and so she agreed to come in and sing it for us, and she just did it for the first time with the orchestra last night in rehearsal and did a really, really fabulous job. And it's just, I mean, that if you know the film score there, it's such an epic journey of these hobbits through, and of course, at the end, there's these moments of tranquility and peace, and then the song kind of comes out of that. So you'll see her come on stage and sit for 10 minutes. So when is she going to sing? And at the very end, it just ends with this gorgeous song, and her voice has this just tremendous purity to it that I think will be very moving to the audience.
And this is a tradition to annually bring back the youth competition winners from the previous year and have them be a part of the season?
Yes, it's not usually done in this concert. It just kind of worked out that way for this year, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was just in the news the other day, right? You selected the most recent winners?
Yes. So we have Reese Bleakley, who won the junior division on flute, and then Trevor Fiskus, who won the senior division on piano. So Trevor will be playing in the January 2016 concert. We'll be playing a piano concerto with the orchestra.
So it's time to wrap this up.
Sure.
We could talk longer, but we're on the clock a little bit here. So, Duane, is this your last full-on concert with the Juno Symphony?
Yeah, I was brought up for several visits this year while they were doing their candidate search for their new conductor. And so I covered a lot of rehearsals this year, but this is the first concert that I'm seeing from start to finish and conducting there. And so it's my ninth time up here in Juneau, and I love it. Been coming since 2009, on and off, whenever been invited. And hopefully there'll be a 10th visit some point in the future. But it's just a great time. It's a great city. You guys have such an amazing support for your artists here. I'm just constantly impressed going to the art galleries and the concerts, both the folk music concerts as well as the art music concerts and jazz and classics and all these things that I've seen in the visits that I've been here. You really have a great thing going here, so you should be very proud of your city. It's pretty amazing.
Well, Juno Symphony is a big part of that as well. So for people who want to find out more information about the performances this weekend.
Sure. Yeah, go to junosymphony.org or pick up your tickets at the Jack or Hearthside Books or at the door.
Dwayne Corbin and Lisa Abias, thank you very much, both of you, for coming in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, and up next on a Juno Afternoon, we're going to be learning about a statewide group of middle schoolers who have been learning about drones. And our guest this afternoon by phone from Anchorage is Dr. Herb Schroeder, who is the founder of ANSEP, and ANSEP is Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. And Dr. Schroeder is also the vice provost at UAA. Dr. Schroeder, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to a Juno Afternoon.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, you're quite welcome. This sounds wonderful, the thought of 48 middle school students from all across the state coming into Anchorage and being on the UAA campus and being a part of your program, and in this instance, learning about drones. There's just so many good things wrapped up in this. And before we talk really just about the drone aspect here first, why don't you, for the audience, just describe, tell people what ANSEP is, what you've created.
ANSEP is an acronym for the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. And we started ANSEP in 1995 in an effort to place Alaska Native people and other rural people into professional positions as engineers. And I started with one student, and since then the program's expanded to include bachelor of science degrees in science and all engineering, and we work in Fairbanks and Anchorage with university students and all around the state with students starting as early as sixth grade. So sixth grade students participate in what we call the ANSEP Middle School Academy. And Middle School Academy students come into Anchorage for 12 days, and the very first thing that they do is build a PC computer. And then they earn the right to keep the computer by successfully completing Algebra 1 before they graduate from 8th grade. And 77% of those students do that. and the average for all kids in the nation is 26%. So our students are performing at levels three times better than national average in middle school. Students then can come on our campus after they graduate from eighth grade, and they join something called the Acceleration Academy, where they take university classes from university professors and earn credit both at the university and in high school. So some of the first students that we had participate in Middle School Academy are now beginning to graduate from high school a full year early, and they've completed Calculus 1, Calculus 2, Calculus 3 differential equations, which is all the math that you need for an engineering degree. So you've got 17-year-old students entering university, what I call hyper-prepared for college. And then here at the university, we have about 400 students in science and engineering degree programs, and we retain them at a rate of 75%, which is, again, higher than the national average. And now we have graduate school components, too. We have two students graduating with PhDs in engineering this summer. So it's a comprehensive program that goes, you know, we could have contact with a kid in sixth grade, and then every single year all the way through a PhD.
So how does a student get involved initially, and once they're in the program, are they in the program year after year as long as they continue to kind of meet the standards?
Yeah, as long as they continue to do well in academically and they don't get in any trouble, they're welcome to return every single summer.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I neglected to mention was when we first engaged students in middle school for that 12-day academy session, those students reapply and they can come back every summer for 5 days for what we call career explorations. And that's where the students actually built quadcopter drones this year. Some of them built quadcopter drones and then learned to fly them. And then they were challenged with designing something for the bottom of the drone that would allow them to fly across the room, pick an object up, and then return it to another place in the room and drop the object, which was a big challenge for them. I mean, just building the drone was a challenge. But they had 5 days to do all this, and they were successful.
So the subject of, or the topic of drones, I guess every year you're challenged with figuring out some innovative idea or approach to motivate and inspire these students. How did you come upon drones?
Well, we know from research that we've done that the computer building piece, it's not getting the computer that's the kids excited about completing Algebra 1. It's what we call intrinsic motivators. So a student builds a computer and loads it up with software. There's a lot of pride associated with that. It's an esteem-building activity. First, they're afraid. They don't think they can do it. And then all of a sudden, they can. It does wonderful things for a kid's self-esteem. So everything that we do is about igniting those intrinsic motivators in students, and we do it every year with them, and it's, our kids are just, they're on fire. You know, you look at the regular K-12 system, and it isn't performing that way. Only 70% of our students graduate from high school, and 45% of those go to college. And 52% of those that come to college need some sort of remediation. So when you put that all together, that means that only 15 to 20% of high school freshmen are college ready at the end of 4 years. That is horrible, because we are the second most expensive K-12 system in the nation. And we're second from the bottom in student performance. And it's because we're not doing it right. There's a lot of people working really hard, but they're not doing the right work.
So last week you completed one of these 5-day residential camp programs. You had 48 middle school students from across the state, and you had very strong representation from Bush communities, which was impressive to me. It wasn't just a, you know, population center based opportunity. So you get this mix of kids from across the state, and then 5 days. How are they taught? How do you structure the actual beginning? Here's the opening lecture, and here's the project that you have to complete at the end. How is it structured?
Yeah, we have some very fundamental rules. Everybody works in teams of three, and there's no lecturing allowed. So that we present students with a problem. We say, here's what you have to do. Here's how you put it together, and you let them go. And then each team of three people has what I would call a knowledge expert, who's one of our university students. Not each team of three, like one university student will have three teams. So that student will have 9 students to work with if they get stuck along the way. And the whole, that's part of that intrinsic motivation is you, instead of telling somebody or talking to them, you're figuring out how to do it. And the evidence indicates that this is a very, very powerful thing.
And for this group, now, do they come back again this summer and do more, or do you have a second group of middle schoolers who roll through the camp?
Yeah, another group, a group of 54 is coming through now, but they're doing a different exploration exercise in health sciences.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, there's another one that's going to do the UAVs again, the drone project again later in the summer. And we're going to have 500 kids on our campus this summer. 120 of those are high schoolers, and then 27 are students that are transitioning into the university, and all the rest are middle school students. Because this is we're trying to rebuild the culture, and you have to start young and get lots of students in the pipeline. We have about 1,800 students total now.
Hmm. Well, sounds like a very successful program and a growing program. I just want to comment that a Juno student was in your most recent camp. Bryce Norton participated in the thought of at the end there when all the students are actually testing their drones, trying to meet the requirements. That must be quite the moment watching everybody seeing the fruits of their labor.
Yeah, it's very cool. There's lots of yelling and lots of excited students, so you should interview that guy and see what he thinks about it.
Yeah. When I read about this, that's exactly what I envisioned. Dr. Schroeder, anything else about the ANSEP program that you'd like to tell the audience about?
Well, ANSEP is something that we work primarily with Native students and rural students now, but it's something that could benefit the entire state. And we have a plan now for Acceleration High School. We don't know where we're going to put this yet, but we laid out a curriculum for this based on students coming in prepared and ready to go with Algebra 2 their freshman year. And going through this high school, they can graduate in 3 years with a high school diploma. And in that 3 years, they'll have 25 high school credits. Need 21 in the state to graduate, and 46 credits that would count towards a bachelor's degree in science or engineering. So that means you finish high school in 3 years, and 3 years later you finish your bachelor's degree in science or engineering. And what we did was we said, well, that's quite a savings to the state. And we extended those numbers out based on the total University of Alaska graduation class in 2013, and it came out to $180 million in state of Alaska general funds, if we could do this for every kid in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So the potential to dramatically improve education and reduce the cost is here. It's sitting right here at ANSEP, and we just need to make a lot of people aware of this so that it can happen.
Dr. Schroeder, for folks who would like to learn more about the ANSEP program, would you just direct them to the website?
ANSEP.net, yes.
Okay, very good. We've been speaking with Dr. Herb Schroeder, who is a founder of ANSEP and vice provost at UAA. Congratulations on the program, and thank you for joining us today on a Juno afternoon.
Well, I appreciate being asked. Thank you.
Well, I started out to be a towboat man, but I never got the hang of a ratchet bar. I was growing up a deckin' in the Illinois trade with coal dust in my ear. I got stuck in the ice on Christmas Eve and I froze my ass, it's true. And just a shivering and a shaking with the down south case of them steamboat whistle blues. Oh, Captain Way, I'm sorry, my hat is off to you. You've been a hanging out by the old cook stove with the steamboat whistle blues. Calls your phone, but it didn't get no one to answer. So I opened up the window and smoked a little bit and I watched the cars go by. I'm gonna hunt you up and ask you, have you found out anything new? Or are you a hanging to the best you have with a steamboat whistle blue? I've been right here since 9 o'clock, and believe you me, that's true. I just looking at the waterways journal with a steamboat whistle blue. The city's grown up where it looks all square like a crossword puzzle on the landscape. It looks like an electric shaver now where the courthouse used to be. The grass is all synthetic and we don't know for sure about the food. The only thing we know for sure is in steamboat whistle blue. I'd sit and watch my TV if I thought I could trust the news about the only thing I trust these days in steamboat whistle blue. Johnny, well, I heard him say, and he stretched out back on the waterbed. Bluegrass music is a thing of the past, and the same for rock and roll. And I loaned him $2 or $3, and he gave me the latest news. And he left me here with a rolling stone and the steamboat whistle blues. I'll tear off down the river someday before I'm through. I'll then come back here and see it out with the steamboat whistle blues.
And up next on a Juno afternoon, interesting art project of the Arc of Anchorage. It's entitled Stick Figures, and our guest by phone from Anchorage is Naomi Hudawanis. I hope I pronounced Naomi's name correctly. Naomi, did I get it right?
Yes, you did. It's a bit of a tricky one.
Well, welcome to the show. I understand that you're the creator of the Stick Figure Alaska project for the Arc of Anchorage. Let's talk a little bit about the project at first, and then I want to make sure we talk about the Arc of Anchorage as well. But tell folks what the Stick Figure Alaska project is.
All right. So Stick Figure AK is an extremely exciting project. It's open to Alaskans from all over the state. We have actually had a Southeast submission already from Ketchikan, so Juno's got to step up now. But what it is it's a way for all of Alaskans for us to be able to celebrate our ability to create and also to celebrate who we are, so our culture, what we like, our interests, you know, and what you do is you just create up to 3 stick figures that reflects something about who you are, your personality, something you like to do, and then you take a picture of it, and you can upload it. You just visit the website, ak.stickfigurecollective.com. Again, that's ak.stickfigurecollective.com, and you fill out the form, upload your stick figure or stick figures. Once they're uploaded, they'll go in through the approval process, and if they're approved, they'll go into the submission gallery. And what you can do is you can share it with your friends on Facebook and Twitter and try to get lots of votes, which are likes, in the submission gallery. And if you happen to be the top 100 voted, publicly voted stick figures, then you will actually be printed in a coffee table book, which is super exciting. And then we also have a few other prizes for like the top 5 and top 3 as well.
Now, the stick figures, I mean, most people think, okay, pencil on paper, they doodled with stick figures as a kid or what have you, but this is wide open for interpretation in terms of creativity and use of materials, is that correct?
Exactly, and you know, that's really why that thing you just said is so powerful, and that's the reason why we went with stick figures is because, like you said, whenever you think of a stick figure, oftentimes we kind of just think of, you know, some doodle on a piece of paper, which doodles are great. I mean, I love to doodle, but we often kind of just disregard, like, I guess, their potential of a stick figure. And unfortunately, that happens as people experience disabilities, and that's what the Arc of Anchorage, we serve people with disabilities. So that's why we chose stick figures. So you don't have any limit on size, on food, you know, whatever. You, as long as you can get a picture of it, there are some official rules that you do have to abide by. But other than that, I mean, we've had great submissions. I mean, there's, if you go even to the homepage, there's some examples to kind of get the creative juices flowing. Like, we have a stick figure made out of Alaskan king crab legs, and so all kinds of things. The sky's kind of pretty much the limit.
Let's talk a little bit about the Arc of Anchorage. The purpose of this particular project and its connection to the Arc of Anchorage, maybe let's just go there. What is the Arc of Anchorage? What are the services that are being provided there?
So the Arc of Anchorage is a nonprofit. We're actually a branch of the Arc National, and there's about 1,000 branches across the nation, but here in Alaska, we have the Arc of Anchorage, and we don't just serve Alaskans here in the Anchorage Bowl. We also serve Alaskans statewide. For example, like our nursing program, we have nurses that visit Southeast every 3 months, including Juneau, Kolot, Ketchikan, Petersburg, Thorne Bay, Craig. So we definitely, through the nursing program, are statewide, but we offer an array of services for people who experience intellectual and developmental disabilities, everything from, like I said, our nursing program to our recreation center to group homes and our supported employment program. And we also have SPARC, which is what kind of is tied together with a stick figure AK. We have this gallery on D Street here in Anchorage called SPARC, where people who experience disabilities are able to not only have a professional studio place to create art, but also display their art through First Friday gallery showings and be involved with the art community through that way.
And how did you get involved with this project?
Well, I work for the ARC as the visual communication specialist, and each year the ARC of Anchorage chooses one of their programs to celebrate with the community to raise awareness and to garner support. And so this year the focus was SPARC, and so I was trying to think of a creative way to involve not just people that attend our 2 functions and just at the event, but also throughout the whole year, and to help really raise awareness about how people of all abilities, you know, no matter what our abilities are, we all create. I mean, we create sounds and movements and words and thoughts and pictures. And so to be able to celebrate that through stick figures is in a way that we can have fun while also raising awareness.
So the primary goal here is, this is not a fundraiser. This is an awareness raiser. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just you don't have to, you know, there's definitely no payment whatsoever to participate in Stick Figure AK. It's free. In fact, like I said, if you actually are one of the top 100 voted ones, you actually receive stuff. So because you'll actually be in the book. Now, the book is available for pre-order, so you can, the same website that we're at, there is a way you can support the Ark of Anchorage and Spark by pre-ordering the book, because a portion of the proceeds will be going, you know, to, you know, after printing and everything, to help with our services. So
the project, it's just underway, correct? I mean, you've just kind of got the word out, or you're getting the word out now, and people can work on this and submit through the summer. Is the deadline
exactly
September? Is that what I read?
Mm-hmm, September 1st. So we just launched it May 28th. And we are accepting submissions through September 1st. We do have a voting window up till September 7th. So if you happen to sneak in there at the very end, you still have time to share and try to get enough votes. But, yeah, you can definitely be submitting throughout the summer. So,
well, I must admit, the thought of it, the title captures one's imagination right away, because stick figure is just a universal thing. I think I'm mm-hmm. sure in all cultures, everybody knows what a stick figure is. But mm-hmm. to right away see people's creative takes on coming up with stick figures, it is a lot of fun. So I imagine once you get the word out and people start looking at this and the buzz is kind of created, you're probably going to have a lot of really fun things to judge and have to select from, or at least I hope you will.
Well, I mean, I'm already having so much fun watching it. And really the fun thing about this is that the public itself are the ones that are voting. So anyone is invited to vote. So you do have to, you know, be from Alaska to participate in Stick Figure Alaska as far as making a stick figure, but you can invite any of your friends and family to vote on your stick figure in the gallery by liking it in the gallery. And then that way, you know, it's kind of like everyone gets to participate in the digital collective and then the top 100 in the print collective. But I'm already, like you said, it is so much fun. I'm having a blast just watching the creativity pour in through all the different stick figures that have been submitted so far. It's pretty exciting.
Anything else about the project or the program itself that we haven't touched on that you want to make sure the audience is aware of?
We do have, if you go onto the website, there's, you know, details on how to participate there on the home page. But also if you go to our press page on that website, ak.stickfigurecollective.com, we have a cool YouTube video. It's also on the Ark of Anchorage YouTube channel that you can share on your social media, and it helps to show, you know, in a fun way how to participate in Stick Figure AK. There's also a video on there from our launch. We wanted to be able to kind of help share the experience statewide. So we have a clip on there from the launch that we did on May 28th at the Beartooth Theater Pub here in Anchorage with a speech. It's very short, but you can watch it and kind of get some more details on just like the deeper meaning behind this and really how powerful this really is. Like you said, it's stick figures have been part of cultures, you know, like from the beginning of time. And so they're such a powerful archetype. And then at the same time, we also have our creativity. Each one of us as individuals and our unique tastes and interests and hobbies and personalities. So.
And, of course, when people go online and learn more about the program, there's an opportunity to learn more about the Ark of Anchorage and the important services that are provided there as well.
Yes. There is a link to the Ark of Anchorage to the Stick Figure website. Again, that's ak.stickfigurecollective.com. And you can definitely learn more about the Ark of Anchorage. Spark, the gallery, also has a website, spark425.com. And if you are, you know, happening to some, you know, for some reason be visiting Anchorage over the summer, we have some really cool displays going on in the gallery as well this summer. So.
Well, Naomi, anything else you'd like to mention before we move along here?
Just to remind everyone to really have fun, embrace their ability to create with us, represent and from Southeast, and to visit the website, ak.stickfigurecollective.com.
We've been speaking with Naomi Hudawanis, creator of the Stick Figure AK project for the Ark of Anchorage. Naomi, you've captured my imagination on this, so I'm going to spend some time and submit something at some point this summer. I'm very intrigued. And
awesome.
Congratulations on the project, and good luck with it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 10th of June. 2015. It's the birthday of the man who said, "A novelist may lose his readers for a few pages. A playwright never dares lose his audience for a minute." The playwright Terence Rattigan, born in London, 1911. It's the birthday of Saul Bellow, born in Lachine, Quebec, Canada, 1913, Russian Jewish parents who had emigrated to Canada in 1911 and who soon moved to Chicago in the Humboldt Park neighborhood. His father was a bootlegger, delivered coal. He imported onions. Bellow's childhood was poor. He was a slum kid, loved Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe, went off to Northwestern, studied anthropology there, landed in New York, became a Trotskyist. He was training in the Merchant Marine when World War II ended. He had completed his first novel that came out in 1944, Dangling Man, while he was still in the service. Went off to teach at the University of Minnesota, lived very humbly in St. Paul. Then he won a Guggenheim, moved to Paris, and it was there that he composed the novel that made his name, The Adventures of Augie March. It came out in 1953, won the National Book Award. He wrote the book, he said, in a purple fever, writing longhand on trains and in cafes. He said it was a kind of spontaneous event. It was my liberation. Saul Bellow went on to write Henderson the Rain King, Herzog, Humboldt's Gift. But even after he was financially secure, he still taught at the University of Chicago. He said, "You're all alone when you're a writer. Sometimes you just feel you need a humanity bath. So you can talk about books, politics, history, America." It's the birthday of the novelist James Salter, born New York City, 1925, pilot in the Air Force, flew 100 combat missions during the Korean War, and came back to become a novelist, best known for his book A Sport and a Pastime, about the love affair between a Yale dropout living in Paris and a working-class French girl. And it's the birthday of the biologist and writer Edward O. Wilson, born Birmingham, Alabama, 1929, winner of two Pulitzer Prizes for his books On Human Nature and The Ants, A-N-T-S, Ants. Here's a poem for today by Freya Manfred entitled Grandma Shorba's Ragamuffin Stew. During World War II, Grandma Shorba handed plates of bread and meat to strangers who asked for work in exchange for food. After chopping wood and mending fences, the lean, stoop-shouldered men went on their way. "May God watch over them," Grandma said. I was glad I didn't have to follow them down the long train tracks, silvering west. I didn't want to sleep beside a strange campfire around the bend in the next world. But I worried how they'd survive and asked my parents if they could live with us. My begging only made everyone nervous. Maybe Grandma's stories of the Good Samaritan and the loaves and fishes weren't true. If I'd been in charge, I'd have asked those men to stay. But Grandma, who trusted God, fed them, then sent them on their way. Grandma Shorba's Ragamuffin Stew, a poem by Freya Manfred from Speak Mother, published by Red Dragonfly Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Centennial Hall Convention Center, established in 1983 and located in Juneau's Willoughby District. Centennial Hall offers a space for concerts, conventions, festivals, and more. Upcoming events for the month of June include the reissuance of tax-exempt cards from the CBJ Sales Tax Office, Gold Belt Inc.'s 41st Annual Shareholder Meeting, Arizona Association of School Business Officials Executive Directors Group Conference, and more. Additional information at juno.org/centennial.
And I'd like to welcome Amy Kadinger. Is that correct? Did I get
it
right?
Kadinger, uh-huh.
Kadinger, okay, into the studio. Amy is a certified health coach, and this evening she has a presentation at Bartlett Hospital, and the topic is eating for energy. It's at 6 o'clock from 6 to 7, and this is for free, I understand, but you do want people to register in advance if possible, so...
Yeah, if possible. Space is limited, so I only have a few more spots available, so I would really like if people could go ahead and email me beforehand so I don't end up with too many people and have to turn people away.
So we'll talk about that, how to get a hold of you in just a moment. But it was interesting in that reading about what your presentation is going to be this evening. There was a couple of questions that you had posed on your website, I think, and about this topic. What would your life be like with an abundance of energy and vitality? And what foods are best to eat to increase your energy? And these are intriguing questions, and I'm guessing that sugar and coffee are not the things that you have in mind when you make a presentation like this. So eating for energy, why don't you tell people about that topic and the kinds of things you'll touch on this evening?
Certainly. Well, we really are what we eat. Our food goes into our stomach, it gets digested and absorbed into our blood, and then our blood creates our cells, tissues, organs, and even our thoughts. So we feel and think differently when we're eating meat as opposed to when we're eating broccoli or, if we're consuming sugar, alcohol, and caffeine. They make us feel differently. And I have a series of workshops. Right now, tonight is going to be eating for energy. I also talk a lot about sugar as well, because when we're eating these different things, they really affect us. We have a euphoric high when we eat certain types of foods, and then unfortunately our blood sugar levels drop down and then we crash and we're just completely exhausted, and we're relying on things like the quick fixes, the sugars, the caffeines, to really get us through, when in reality if we could just eat the right foods, we would have so much energy. And along my journey, I've really, really discovered that I had gotten really, really sick, unfortunately, and I believe that it was linked to what I was consuming. And I've done a lot of research on, what to eat, how to heal myself, because I had gotten so sick that I wasn't able to work anymore. And so I started doing basically a lot of research on how to get myself better, and I went through my own journey through health. And along the way, I eventually found the School of Integrative Nutrition in New York, and that led me into health coaching, which I didn't even know what that was, so I'm sure a lot of people out there have no idea what that is or what I do. But what I do ultimately, my main focus is individualized and custom health coaching. So ultimately, I would love to sit down one-on-one with somebody, figure out what their health goals are, because we're all different. What's going to work for me is probably not going to work for you or work for someone else. So I really figure out what it is that somebody needs to become healthier in their life, and then we work towards making small changes and healthy habits to get them to where they need to be healthier and having more vitality and energy. The classes that I have are a stepping point, and we talk about, what we should be doing. And a lot of us do know what we should be doing, but unfortunately we're not.
So why is that? Because we of course, we all know to eat a healthy diet, and there's certain things we just know, but why is it that it's so difficult for almost everybody, or for so many people, or such a large percentage of the population, that it's a struggle to actually do that on a daily basis, to have a healthy diet and have the benefits of a healthy diet?
Absolutely. It is a struggle. And, you know, honestly, sugar is a drug. It has the same effects on our body, same addictive properties as cocaine or alcohol. And I've even seen a study about a bunch of, unfortunately, heroin addicts that were taking, I can't remember the name of the exact medication that they were being given, but when they were giving this medication to wean off heroin, they actually also lost all desire and cravings for sugar and were able to overcome their sugar addictions as well. When we're consuming sugar, we get a euphoric feeling, you know, the serotonin, dopamine, they're all released in our brain, and then we crash from those, but we do become addicted. And so really knowing that that's happening, knowing that you're a little out of control, honestly, because you are addicted to it. So knowing those things, knowing that within 3 days that you would be able to kick those cravings, and then after that time, it's a matter of just changing your habits. So, you know, the first 3 days may be a little bit difficult. People do have a little bit of withdrawal from sugar, but if you can get past those three days, just like smoking, then you're able to just work on habits. And that's where I, as a coach, lend a helping hand to make sure that we're making small changes and lasting changes that we can carry through our lives.
So eating for energy is the topic of your session this evening, and I do want to make sure you give out contact information. So why don't you go ahead and do that right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So if anybody wants to go ahead and attend tonight, I've got just a couple more spaces available. If they could go ahead and email me at akshealthyhabits@hotmail.com. And that stands for Amy Kadinger's Healthy Habits or Alaska's Healthy Habits.
And the presentation this evening at 6 o'clock is for free, correct? But you want people registered?
Yes, I want people to register so I don't have too many people showing up in the small space.
And eating for energy tonight. So that we've touched, I think, maybe on the theme of what your discussion will be tonight, which is to, you know, bottom line is if you're eating a healthy diet, odds are you're going to be more energetic.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the biggest thing that really, really fascinates me is the thought that our body can heal itself. It knows what to do if we're feeding it the right things, the things really with the same intelligence. So, for example, if you break a carrot, or eat half of the carrot and stick it back in the ground, it's going to grow itself. And so it's going to heal itself and regenerate. So if we're eating the foods that have that same capability, that same healing capability, it's going to be able to also heal our bodies and to give us more energy. When we're not eating the right foods, unfortunately, we're depleting ourselves of vitamins and minerals. It actually is taking those things away from our bodies to digest those foods and give our bodies those nutrients.
Fascinating. So this evening, one more time, contact information for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody that wants to come tonight, if you could please go ahead and email me at akshealthyhabits@hotmail.com. Or, you know, even if you wanted to shoot me a text, you could probably do that as well. My phone is 206-450-3733. And if you just want to text me as well to make sure that there's space available, that would be fine as well.
Amy, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast.